Blog Talk Radio.
First World Order Radio, finally, finally, we are on the air, no doubt. All right, all right.
There's always going to be somebody in the building on First World Order Radio.
We get on into some of that order consciousness tonight.
First World Order Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m.
We got to talk about what is taking place on the planet.
There's always going to be somebody in the building on First World Order Radio. First, we need to let you know we're going to be doing more shows, giving out more information on Wednesdays. Wednesday at 8 o'clock, we are now going to make this is the hottest day of the week.
Proceeding levels in time, order, and importance. The most prominent parts, voices, or instruments. Earthly state of human concerns and existence. An indefinite multitude, quantity, or distance. System regulates to bring about specifics in the room based on value and natural characteristics. Current radiates electromagnetics of sound through the air thing that your thoughts transmits it. Proceeding levels in time, order, and importance. The most prominent parts, voices, or instruments. Earthly state of human concerns and existence. An indefinite multitude, quantity, or distance. Order. System regulates to bring about specifics in the group based on value and natural characteristics.
Radio.
Current radiates electromagnetics of sound through the air thing that your thoughts transmits it.
You need to understand how magical this, something like this every Wednesday can become. So you need to start getting your calendar right, get your schedule right. You need to know our intention straight out.
Alright, so, I mean, these clues are given throughout the various languages was to piece the puzzle of this ancient mystery school back together again.
And what we plan on doing, both of us, is bringing y'all some surefire dynamite. We're going to take this level up a notch. We're going to have stuff to do here. This is not just going to be about philosophies and theories, shit that works.
You have activated pilot land in which I produced this black chemical called melanin.
What we did was gave a hard line in the sand between the different definitions of esoteric study and exoteric study. Playtime is over.
Peace, peace, peace and love to the human family all over the world. This is Brother Professor Fahim Richmond Eel, filling in for Dr. Eileen Nutapak Eel Bay for tonight. I will be your host for tonight. And our topic will be mass control through mass media and human engineering of consciousness and through religion, lockdown, and how it has affected the people across the world, and especially us as Asiatic people, misnomered black people. Let me start from the book, Control Engineering Human Consciousness, by Jim Keith. It says here, the origin of control. Agents of the world's elite have been long engaged in a war on the populace of Earth. Greed is the motivation for this war. A greed so pervasive that it encompasses the planet and all of the beings on it. But in recent times, a philosophy has been used to justify that greed. It is the philosophy of mass control, the ultimately aims of dictating every aspect of human life, even remolding man's perception of reality himself. Although the lust for control can be descended upon since the beginning of recorded history, a nexus of particular importance arose in Germany in the latter half of the 19th century. Country increased in military and industrial might becoming the strongest power in Europe at that time, that is. A revolutionary simultaneously took place in German philosophic and scientific thought that paradoxically would spread through the world to create positive technological change as well as to birth innumerable toxic children, according to one source. Now, I'm going to stop here. I said it took place in Germany. Well, that's not quite true. No one knew exactly where it took place at, but it, as far as my knowledge, it took place really in England by the Tavistock Institution of Mind Control. So let me go on. The sudden change from relative political weakness to world power and from economic insecurity to prosperity proved to be a great strain on the German character and public life. The spread of materialistic philosophy of life was worldwide in this age, and the idolatry of power was not confined to Germany, but its corrosive effect was particularly strong in a country that was not inured to power. That means this country here, because we are being bombarded by mind control, the media, newspaper, the radio, television, movies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, including religion and your religious institutions, which has been reduced to mind control institutions. Now let me go on. One aspect of the transformation, this adultery of power, was a negative transformation of the psychological sciences. In the late 19th century, earlier more humanistic approaches to understanding mankind were replaced by a scientific philosophy that would be employed less as a measure for understanding of man than a justification for a new feudalism and a mechanism of pure control. And that's so correct. A lot of us are fooled by the media to the extent that I can give you an example. If you ever watch the program Cops, well, most of the people believe that a lot of the things to do that do on Cops, such as violating their constitutional rights and avoiding true law, what true law should be. Most, even your law enforcement officers, don't really know the law. Not really. I mean, shocking as that may be. Because you look at the TV program Cops, there, a lot of these people's constitutional rights are being violated by a massive scale. If you study and know constitutional law, on what law is and what law isn't. Now let me go on. A time-dishonored approach in the manipulation of man. Kind as though the philosophy and techniques of eugenics. This is the attempted perfecting of humanity through genetic means. Genetic means, selective breeding, sterilization, biological manipulation, and even murder for those considered unfit. The Asiatic people, misnomered black people, is one, meaning us. Because we've been already classified as useless eaters, as well as a lot of our European counterparts, as a lot of them don't know. Some of them do know, but most of them don't. Let me go on. A study of eugenics has its beginning in Germany, sometime after the mid-19th century mark, stimulated by Volkisch concerns for Aryan racial purity. Rudolf Virchow, pathologist and politician, began a study of national ethnic statistics in 1871, convinced that the majority of Germans would prove to be a relative pure Nordic descent. The results of his studies prove otherwise. According to Virchow, the obvious solution was to set about Nordicizing the debased German stock.
Hmm.
Wow. There's one paragraph that says, even the name of the subject betrays something of its orientation. Galton derived the words eugenics from the Greek eugenes, meaning well-born. Now, Ripon derived the word eugenics from the Greek word eugenes, meaning well-born. This aggrandizement of the privileged class was one of the reasons why eugenics was researched. Found ready support from the money in both America and Europe. America and Europe. It justified their disdain for a parasystem of the masses.
Mm.
Chairs in eugenics and eugenics in working society were established at the University College in London in 1904. What did I tell you before? Okay. With the Galton Laboratory for National Eugenics, founded in 1907 and in 1905 in the United States, the Rockefellers and Carnegie constructed the Eugenics Records Office at Cold Springs Harbor, New York, where genetic research, none dare call it eugenics, is still being done in 1999 and up to the end to this day. Parenthesis. Now this is by Carnegie, Andrew Carnegie, and the Rockefeller family. This right here in the United States corporate nation ward state. Let me go on. In 1912, the first International Congress of Eugenics was convened at the University of London, presided over by its president, who also happened to be Charles Darwin's son. Those who you are enlightened know who Charles Darwin was. Okay? Okay. Vice presidents of the Congress included the First Lord of the Admiralty, Winston Churchill, N. von Gruber, Professor of Hygiene at Munich University, Dr. Alfred Ploetz, President of the International Society for Race Hygiene, Charles W. Eliot, President Emeritus of Harvard, and the inventor of the telephone, Alexander Graham Bell. We all know that's a lie. He did not invent the telephone. It was the Asiatic War that done that. But we'll get to that some other time. Now let's get back to this. The Second International Congress of Eugenics was held in 1921, sponsored by U.S. Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover and the presidents of Clark University, Smith College, and the Carnegie Institution. Other prominent supporters, you see here, of eugenics of the period who will loom large in the history of control to follow include many members of the American Eastern establishment, Dulles and Harriman families. Harriman, Abraham Harriman, was a member of the Skull and Bone Secret Society. All right, let me get back. Okay, from 1907 to 1960, more than 100,000 persons were eugenically sterilized in over 30 years. In 30 states in the United States, it is unlikely that the well-known and horrific Nazi approach to eugenics brutally carried out in laboratories and concentration camps during World War II and reportedly claiming hundreds of thousands of victims would have taken place without eugenics theory, having been earlier popularized by British and American scientists and the media and funded by American and British money interests. For those of you that think that the American so-called government and British so-called government are benevolent, listen to this. German eugenic studies were organized and bankrolled by the family-run Rockefeller Foundation and its allies in medicine, industry, and politics, with large grants provided to the Kaiser Wilhelm for psychiatry and the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Eugenics, and Human Heredity in Munich. And later faculty was ran by the fascist Swiss psychiatrist Ernst Rutten and his underlings Otmar Verster and Franz Kalman. In 1932, Ernst Rutten was named president of the Worldwide Eugenics Federation, Rockefeller Foundation, for eugenics in Germany would continue during World War II, and stated justification being that the war should not impede scientific research. Okay, you listen to this? All right. Kaiser, Wilhelm, the Kaiser in German, which means Caesar. That's Caesar for German, for those that didn't know. Okay. Okay, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute eugenic studies were initially endowed by Gustav Krupp von Bohlen and Hobart, head of the Krupp munitions monolith, and James Loeb of the Kuhn Loeb banking family. Loeb's relatives, the Warburgs, were banking partners of William Rockefeller, and both families were responsible for setting up the American Harriman family, also movers and shakers in eugenics and business. All right. We've got another page. Okay. In 1936, the direct predecessor of the CIA's more famous MK Ultra, MK meaning mind control, Ultra means the limit, K Ultra mind control operation was launched at the New York State Psychiatric Institute, funded by Freemasonic Scottish Rite, Northern Supreme Council, and supervised by Dr. Nolan D.C. Lewis, the Masonic Field Representative of Research on Dementia, Precox. The program was directed by Winfred Overhauser, a prominent Freemason and the superintendent of the St. Elizabeth Hospital in Washington, D.C., where much CIA mind control experimentation would take place later. In 1943, Overhauser went on to become the chairman of the Truth Drug Committee for the OSS, among the earliest mind control research programs instituted by American intelligence. Now, I'm going to stop right here. We know most of the people aren't aware how, they're not even aware how controlled they are. They're really, especially in your religious institutions, churches, mosques or synagogues, cathedrals, temples, you name it. But it's basically up under the Romans. The Roman Vatican Church, which is at the hem of the power of it all. They're under the hem of the power of all your banking institutions and corporate banking industrialist banks in the world. And Admiralty Maritime Law as well. This is the Pope. They are the Vatican, the British Crown, which is the shareholders of this great power that they have across the world. Okay, let me get back to mind control again. Let's see. After World War II, Omar Verscher, who had procured funds for Mengele experimentation at Auschwitz, was hired by the Rockefeller-funded Bureau of Human Heredity in Denmark, and Rutten, Verscher, and Kalman participated in funding the still active American Society of Human Genetics. Kalman was elected director of the organization that would hold that position until 1965. The American Society of Human Genetics is primarily responsible for the current 3 billion human genome project, headquartered at Cold Springs Harbor, the historical center of American eugenic study that is in the forefront of the news today. The relation of eugenics to British psychiatry bears examination. The primary controlling body for psychiatry in England is the British National Association for Mental Health, formed in 1944 and initially ran by the mentally unstable Medical Norman. Can you beat that? By a person that is mentally insane. and privily of the Bank of England. The Bank of England. The group originally met at Norman's London home, where he and Nazi economics minister Hosmer Schacht had met in the 1930s to arrange financing for Hitler. Because a lot of us that know that Germany couldn't do the things they had done if it weren't for the Western corporate banking industrialists putting them on their feet, because they were bankrupt. So where did they get the money to do these things that they done? All these weapons of mass destruction. Okay. Now, let's get to the media. Says here, media management does not always have to be so dramatic. Simple distractions. The circuses, part of historic bread and circuses formula, is another effective technique. The dissemination of entertainment, popular culture, and useless factoids has channeled public attention away from far more important issues such as poverty, human rights, abuses, the equitable distribution of the wealth of the world. True political representation for the vast majority of humans and media controlled by the elite. This is one of the main functions of the television, which in essence is a propaganda box spewing out the positive drug-like reinforcements of sex, violence, and stimulated social interaction. And that is true. The media use Michael Brown situation. Okay, now it's kind of toning down a little bit, if you haven't noticed, because with this thing going on in Syria, and that's what the media does. The media is turning your attention to something that's from something else, from the real issue of what's going on here, with all the real issues. Okay? Say like something they want to do, commit some kind of black ops or operation against another country or take over another country. Then they have something like the World Series, doing the World Series game. That's most time when the things occur. Here it is, the football season getting ready to start. People are got their minds on the football now. Preseason games. What is the new record? What is the new dance? You know, what is the new style? You know, everything, especially the young people's mind, away from what is really important. And that's what the media does. Okay, it says here, as an example of distraction by the media, the political struggle for black, so-called black Americans, for economic and political well-being has been effectively derailed by the safe to the establishment energetics of gangster rap, culture drugs, and sports, preparing black youth to take their place in the world as drug addicts and latter-day stepping fetches, struggling and grinding back poverty. And that is true. Okay. There is no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. And that is very true. Let me stop right there. Very true. Because none of these reporters or journalists dare not tell you the truth. Because if they did, they'll be looking for a job before nightfall. There's no such thing as an independent press. They are all controlled by the same ruling elite power. Okay? There is not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print, It would never appear in print if you try to speak the truth, because that's all controlled. The Time, New York Times, Time Magazine, Newsweek, the news, the local news. I don't care what news, local news, international news, or whatever. It was all controlled, and they tell you what they want you to hear. and they tell the news media to tell you what they want you to hear. But it is a, what you can say, a total, sort of a totalitarian rule-like country, but as covert, it's not overt, but it's in covert acts. It's coverted. So let me go on. I am paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper. I am connected with others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out of the streets looking for another job. I said something like that earlier, about a second ago, okay? If I allow my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. So true. The business of journalists is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon and sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it and I know it. And what's folly is this toasting and independent press. We are the fools of rich men behind the scenes. We are jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. That is true. Because everybody here has a birth certificate. As I said in earlier in my other lectures, actually the birth certificate was actually initially for so-called black people, for ex-slaves. But now the Europeans have had put an application for birth certificates in the year 1921. And the game's been played on them ever since, as well as us. Now, they are attached to the 14th Amendment as well as we are. They don't know that. Most of them don't. There are some do. Some in your radical groups. Some in your right wing groups. What you call the Ku Klux Klan and Aryan Nations. They know. They know the truth. People, other organizations, people like Jordan Maxwell, David Icke, they know. Okay, we go on. Okay. We are tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. I said that before. Our possibilities and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Another media strategy employed in the latter half of the 20th century is subliminally embedded messages. That are a number of methods by which subliminals can be injected into a communication. In electronic media, these include the use of subaudible sounds, backwards masking, telescopic flashes, image association, and other techniques. Print media primarily utilizes embedded messages, images, association, and symbolisms. Some verified examples of media subliminals are, I'll give you an example, in the 1956, the British Broadcasting Company, BBC, transmitted a subliminal message after the course of a regularly scheduled television program. When the program was over, viewers were queried whether they had noticed anything unusual about the program. Only a few persons responded, and still fewer able to identify the subliminal message that has been broadcast. This, of course, is not an indication that the subliminal was unsuccessful. The viewer is not supposed to be able to perceive consciously what the message is, only be influenced subconsciously. And that is correct. They can have some things like the hamburger advertisement. I was watching the hamburger advertisement for, I believe it was Burger King, I'm not sure. But you have women in bathing suits, in bikinis, underwear, sitting on a car eating a Burger King burgers. Now I ask you, everyone that's listening to this program, I ask you, what did that have to do with eating hamburgers? Okay. Let me go on. It says here, in September of 1957, American advertising executive James Vicari told a gathering of journalists that subliminal advertising had been successfully tested for a period of 6 weeks. Subliminal messages to drink Coca-Cola and to eat popcorn had been shown to 45,699 patrons at a movie theater. The projected subliminals had been brief in duration. 1/3,000th of a second had been projected every 5 seconds during the airing of motion pictures. It was reported that popcorn sales rose almost 60%, while Coca-Cola sales increased almost 20%. At about the same time as Vicari's announcement, the Los Angeles television station KTLA announced that they would be commencing with subliminal broadcasts in order to quell public concern. The station indicated that the progress being subliminal messages would be announced prior to airing and that they would only carry non-commercial subliminals, at least initially. The general manager of the station, Lou Arnold, said, "We'll flash on something like join the army or give to the March of Dimes. The next step will be a promote our own shows. Then, and I have a feeling that it is a long way off. We might go into the commercial end of it." According to a press release from the station, however, the subliminals were reportedly canceled without having commenced. You can believe that if you want to. Okay. This will be talking about subliminals. They use women in, like I said, bikini swimsuits. Usually one of a cigarette commercial was on the TV at one time. I could give you an example even of myself. Who are old enough to remember this commercial? Tastes good, like a cigarette should. I still remember that. That slogan from that commercial. Those of you are old enough to know that cigarette smoking commercials have been off TV for quite some time. But I can still recite that slogan. Because as a young boy, I used to watch the commercial. And the subliminal message had been embedded in my mind, that deep and well entrenched into my mind. That shows how well I was mind controlled. Let me go on. Okay. Let's see here. Okay. About the same time as back when move to something else. Also in 1957, radio station WTWO in Bangor, Maine, began running subliminal messages in station promo announcements. The content was, if you have seen this message, write WTWO. And it was flashed thousands of times for 1/80th of a second during a one-month period. The experience was considered unsuccessful, so the nation reported since there is no increase in mail. How many of you sit in front of the television and find yourself dozing off to sleep? Dropping off to sleep, dude. I mean, you're not really that tired or sleepy at the time. But that's what that is. It is a lot of the beats. They have certain beats per second. Because they know how our minds work. What affects the mind? It can make you, or sometimes it can make you feel sexually. Or get sexually active. That's how deep a lot of these subliminal messages and a lot of this mind control system has progressed over the years. on the human minds of the people, not just here in this country, but all over the world, but also the Western world, are more easier to be mind controlled. Let me go on. On January 19, 1958, an undisclosed subliminal message was flashed across the television screens 352 times during a CBC TV network program. A spokesperson for the CBC said that the experiment was inconclusive. Also in 1958, sub-audio phantom spots were the broadcast during the video programs. Broadcasting stations that ran such spots included stations WCCO in Minneapolis, WAAF in Chicago, KLTI in Longview, Texas, KLO in Seattle, and KWA in San Francisco. I mean, they've been doing this for quite some time. Now, another loyal foot soldier in the program for the subjugation of the masses was Rockefeller Alfred C. Kinsey, the co-author of The Influential Sexual Behavior in the Human Male and other volumes. One technique of eugenics and control that is little acknowledged is the destruction of traditional morality and the normalization of deviancy. A lot of you know that this country now and the world now has been reduced to spiritually and morally, now that we are spiritually and morally bankrupt, in a spiritually morally bankrupt society. Okay, let me go on. Kinsey studied at the Bussey Institution at Harvard in the 1920s. At the time, a hotbed of eugenics research, then moved on to teach at Indiana University, where his work and cultural deconstruction would ultimately succeed in decimating American sexual mores, help to fragment the American family, and leave the population still more vulnerable to reproductive cultural, familial, and mind programming. Kinsey always portrayed in the press as a wholesome, Leave It to Beavers style family man, was in one of the scholarly eugenics of pre-World War II, according to biographer James Jones, and recommended that a portion of the lower classes, let me say again, and recommended that a portion of the lower classes should be sterilized to foster a more robust gene pool. Those of you, stop right here, those of you who haven't seen the DVD, Ma'afa 12, I suggest you to get that DVD tape if you haven't already. It touches a lot on that. Intimates was Dr. Aaron Cameron, the infamous Canadian mind control doctor who will be treated in a later chapter. Okay, in many ways, what took place at Kinsey's research laboratory is highly reminiscent of what was going on in an intelligence agency psychiatric lab at the same time. Okay, let me move on. Okay. Kinsey was obsessed with obtaining the great beast, Crowley, day-to-day sex diaries. What they are talking about is Alexa Crowley. He was a beast, but he was a very highly intellectual, and he was very steeped in the occult science. A lot of his occult sciences should not be ignored. But the man was, you could say he was out there. Okay? Okay, Kinsey's most effective weapon for psychological warfare was his Rockefeller's funded study of American sexuality. The most famous volume being his vaunted study, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, published in 1948. Upon the release of the book, 200,000 copies were sold in 2 months, primarily due to the championing of the volume of American media and the Rockefellers. According to the Rim Wolfsmer Legal Counsel for Record Committee investigating tax-exempt foundations in 1954, the Rockefeller Foundation is a statement filed with the committee explaining its connection with the Kinsey studies in this way. In 1931, it became interested in systematic support for studies in sexual psychology and behavior. Its work in these areas was chiefly in connection with the Committee for Research on Remedies of Sex, the National Research Council, and to which by 1954, Foundation had granted $1,755,000 in annual grants, running from $75,000 to $240,000 beginning about 1941. Considerable portion of these funds was supplied to Dr. Kinsey's studies, and one grant was made directed to Dr. Kinsey. The work of the NRC produced some results of truly noteworthy importance. However, the much-publicized bestseller, Kinsey's Studies, based an advocacy of criminal and social reforms on the very unscientific material which Dr. Kinsey had collected and permitted to be widely disseminated. Okay. Okay, let me move to CIA mind control. A study of control must draw a tight focus on programs of American intelligence agencies. William Wild Bill Donovan, in 1940s, to have been the first person to call attention to the need for an American Psychological Warfare Division. This is explained in the beginning of the Office of the Coordinator of Strategic Services, which became the OSS, forerunner of the CIA. Okay? Now, there may have been another influence on Donovan other than the simple perception of the need of spying. According to John Marx, the search for the Manchurian candidate, thing lobbying by British agents in the United States, led directly to the President Franklin Roosevelt creation of the organization that became the OSS in 1942. Learning at the feet of the British, who made available for expertise, is not all their secrets. Donovan put together in an organization where nothing had existed before. After the formation of the OSS, research was launched into the discovery of a truth drug for use during interrogation, as well as into what would later be termed as Manchurian candidate. Hypnotically programmed agents and assassins, the popular coinage derived from the 1959 fiction book at the same time. Those of you who have seen the Manchurian candidate, which was released in 1964 by actor Frank Sinatra and Lawrence Harvey, and won again in the 1990s by the remake of the Manchurian Candidate by Denzel Washington. You must check the two movies out. You may find them very interesting, because believe it or not, there are such things as Manchurian Candidates under the Mind Control Ultra program of the CIA and also the NSA. Okay? Let me move on. Although responsibility for the Mind Control program that was launched in America in the early 1950s has been placed at the doorstep of the CIA, this attribution ignores earlier sources. These programs were the visible edge of a would have that began much earlier with the British America and Nazi eugenic psychiatric New World Order combination propelled by Rockefeller and the Round Table funding, with most prominent agents of the group in America being the Eastern establishments, Harrimans and Dulles. Skull and Bonesman, W. Avery Hammerman family, and promoted eugenics causes since the turn of the century. Hammerman was also a major supporter through the controlling interest in Union Bank of Hitler's rise to power in Germany. In 1951, Hammerman was named director of the Mutual Security Agency, elevating him to an influential position of shepherding the American-British Military Intelligence Alliance. Hammerman and his business partners, Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles, also from a pro-eugenics background, were largely responsible for the increases of American efforts in the area of covert and psychological warfare operations, as well as the promoting of Fabian one-world orientation that was the raising of the Council of Foreign Relations. Okay? Okay. Here we have. The basic of financing of mind control projects. Nelson Rockefeller merged three federal corporations to the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. In such agencies, the National Institute of Mental Health were used to find Artichoke and other CIA mind control projects. Other agencies involved in research into people manipulation at the same time included the Defense Department, a National Science Foundation, the Veterans Administration, the Department of Labor, the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, the National Institute of Mental Health, and the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration. Those of you who have saw these Bourne movies, Jason Bourne, The Bourne Identity, The Bourne Supremacy, and the Bourne Ultimatum, and the latest one was in 2012, I believe, was The Bourne Legacy. If those of you who haven't seen these movies, I advise you to see them and watch them, because they are the very exact movies about what I'm talking about on this topic tonight, dealing with mass control and mind control, engineering of human beings being engineered to think the way they want them to think. Okay, and move on. Here we go here. Among other experiments authorized by Gottlieb were those of Dr. Harris Isbell, who ran the Center for Addiction Research in Lexington, Kentucky, using so-called black heroin addicts as a research fodder. Well, we all know about reading the Tuskegee Institute and experiment among our so-called black men in the 1920s and 30s, and so on. Okay, using black heroin as a research fodder, Isbell tested more than 800 psychoactive chemicals shipped to him directly from Gottlieb. In one experiment, Isbell kept seven addicts stoned on quadruple normal dosages of LSD without interruption for 77 days, jolting them with electric shock to wake them when they fell asleep. At another experiment, Isbell strapped nine men to gurneys, inserted rectal thermometers, shot them up with massive hits of cyclobin, shine lights in their eyes to check pupil dilation, and pounded on their joints to test nervous system response. The subjects of Isbell's torture, Gordon, were paid off with heroin fixes. So they paid these Asiatic brothers with heroin fixes, because that's how people are strung out on drugs. That's how badly they are strung out. They'll really do anything. They are slaves to those drugs. So therefore, they don't really have to pay them anything. They just give them a fix. And these were a lot of the Asiatic people that they had done this to. Okay. Okay, now, curiously, another MK Ultra faction consisted of representatives of the Scottish Rite of Masonry, which has sponsored research into eugenics, psychiatry, and mind control since at least the 1930s. MKUltra Dr. Robert Hanna. Felix was director of the psychiatric research of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry and the director of National Institute of Mental Health. Felix was the immediate senior of Dr. Harris Isbell, already noted in the relation to MKUltra. Another prominent Freemason involved in MKUltra was Dr. Paul Holtz, financed by Army Chemical Center as a member of the American Eugenic Society. Holt was director of the Nazi eugenist Franz Kalman in research at Columbia University in New York State Psychiatric Institute. Okay. Other participants in mind control programs were a garden variety of American fascists and sadists, who saw intelligence agencies work as being the perfect milieu for fulfilling their own murderous desires. There we go. At least four of the MKUltra programs were specifically conducted on children. This is the vast substructure of MKUltra experimentation that has, for the greater part, been successfully concealed by the agency. Believe it or not. One of those unethical and illicit activities may have been the elimination of the so-called black American entertainer and political activist Paul Robeson. Aside from his involvement in the struggle for black rights, no such rights, but I'm going to read this to just get over, you know, goodbye the word black, okay? Okay, in the struggle for black rights in the U.S., Robeson had also campaigned for the colonial independence movement abroad, as led by men like Jomo Kenyatta and Jawaharlal Nehru in the spring of 1961. Three weeks before the CIA Bags of Pigs fiasco, Robeson traveled to Moscow, where he had meetings and interviews and gave speeches. The next step on Robeson's itinerary was to Cuba, where he was scheduled to meet Fidel Castro. Then he planned to head back to the United States to continue his commitment to civil rights activism. Robeson, according to the people who were with him in Russia, was unusually good spirits. At the surprise party at this Moscow hotel, Robeson suddenly fell possessed by extreme paranoia. He went off by himself and tried to kill himself by cutting his wrists. Robeson was admitted to the Priory Hospital in London, where within 36 hours he was given the first of 54 electroconvulsive shock sessions that he would eventually receive. Robeson was never in fully recover from the sudden paranoid bout or from the electric shock. In 1999, Robeson's son was presented formal appeals to the British, American, and Russian intelligence agencies for the release of the classified materials relating to his father's visit to Moscow and the subsequent medical treatment. He believed that the symptoms that his father exhibited suggest he was poisoned by the CIA with the psychoactive chemical BZ in order to halt the entertainer's visit to Havana and to nullify him as a force in the civil rights movement. Robeson Jr. cites that the fact that there had been previous attempts on his father's life, as well as the fact that two of the doctors who treated him in London were linked to MKUltra. Wow. MKUltra was administratively reformed as MKSearch in 1963, running until 1973. Among the MKUltra sub-projects that were carried over was, in one time, paranormal and the use of ESP for espionage. Project said to have been discontinued in 1973, but is documented as having continued until 1984. So who's lying? Okay. Now, I've told you about a lot about the mind control experiments that have been experimented on our people and people in general. They've just been going on for years, you know, through the newspapers, the media, the magazines, television, video, music, even in the sports arena as well. You name it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do some of you get the picture of what I'm talking about now? I hope you are. Okay. Now I'm going to read something out of the, called the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, Shaping the Moral, Spiritual, Cultural, Political, and Economic Decline of the United States of America. Read a paragraph here. When this conflict ended in 1946, the Tavistock practitioners of mass brainwashing and opinion went to war against the American people. That's what they had done. All the techniques and all the brainwashing techniques and all everything they used against the Germans and Japanese in World War II, and after it was all over, they turned it on the American people here in America. As Joseph Stalin said at one time, to control the American people, you must spread terror among the people. Spread terrorism. Those of you that remember 9/11, September 11, 2001, all that was designed to put you in terror, to have you so scared and so much in fear that you're willing to give up your Constitution and your right to consent. We got the people so scared and so frightful that, hey, we are willing to give up our Constitution. Just please make us safe. But those of us that live in the so-called black communities, who ever felt really safe? Come on. Those here in the St. Louis neighborhoods, all over the cities where crime is rampant, with the so-called black on so-called black crime is on a massive scale. We'll make some of these police slayings on Michael Brown and whoever else, et cetera, et cetera, look like Boy Scouts. You know it, I know it, we all know it. Can't argue about that. Okay, let me go on. Okay. We shall never know whether Tavistock miscalculated or indeed at the stage in the manner for a bigger and bloodier war. After all, Meade and Bertrand Russell had stated that what was needed was a world populated by docile subjects. Russell had remarked on the childlike character of the American so-called Negro he had encountered during his travels to the United States. Russell said he was preferred them to the white people. He also said that if the white race was to survive, it will have to learn to behave in the like child manner of the Negro. Yet in the same breath, the Tavistock emissary called black people useless eaters and declared that they ought to be wiped out en masse. So you know what they have planned for us, brothers and sisters. This is what they think of us. Think of you and I. But, of course, it's not going to work because it's the Aquarian Age. As Dr. Deborah Blair said once, it would be like an ant trying to stop an avalanche, tidal wave, so to speak. has to correct that. Because it can't be stopped. The consciousness is out here now. They don't have enough ages, enough plants to put a bundle on us now. This is the Aquarian age, the age of truth. All right. It says here, Russell also liked the docility of the Brazilian people, brought about, he thought, by interrace breeding with Africans brought over as slaves. There is a school of thought that one of the primary objectives of the Friends who planned both world wars was that they would be fought for the most part by young white men. It is certainly true that Germany, Britain, and the U.S. and Russia lost millions of the flower of their male population who were removed from the nation-building stock forever. In the Tavistock engineered World War I war fronts, battles were arranged in such a manner that Russia lost 9 million men killed, or 70% of its entire military strength. You would think there ain't enough killing in the world, would you? Mm. Yeah, but it is. Okay. It says here, as the Duke of Windsor put it in his memoirs, A King's Story, the force of change had not yet thrust so deeply into the texture of British society as to have obliterated much of the old elegance. During the so-called London season, the West End was an almost continuous ball from midnight until dawn. The evening could always be saved by recourse in one or another of the gay nightclubs, which had been become a fashionable and almost respectable. Well, the word gay at that time meant happy, and originally it meant happy. It did not mean homosexuals or male homosexuality or female homosexuality. It had nothing to do with homosexuality at all. It had something to being in a good mood, a gay person. That's actually what a gay person is, happy-go-lucky person. But they have changed words and put it in the English language, part of the mind control experiment. Part of it. To have you thinking that certain words mean this, and it doesn't mean that at all. Okay? Accompanying the testamentary emancipation was a movement of revolt, particularly among young people, against every conventional restraint of mind or body coming to a close amid the shattered idols of the fallen empires. The post-war generation in Europe revolted against every more and custom as they fought desperately to throw off the horrors of war they had lived through. Necklands plunged public smoking and drinking become a form of revolt. Homosexuality, lesbianism became demonstrable not from any inner conviction, but by way of protest and what had happened, and a rebellion against what the war had destroyed. I could say something. A lot of people think that what they say, you can say, well, it's because of the change of times. You know, the change of times is changing. No, the change of times don't change. The reason why they have changed is because they've been engineered by the elite to make it go that way. Time never changes. Therefore, when they engineered the people to change in a certain way, the way that's all about is by design. Okay? Let me go on. Okay. Now, okay, let me see if I can find here. Okay, now, talking about giving up your consent, your right to consent, and your constitutional rights through terror. because that's what they got. Most of the people at right now, they are so terrorized they're able to give up anything to make them so-called safe. Here I can read from a paragraph called The Drumbeat of Propaganda Continued Through Numerous Articles About the Background and Experience of Homeland Director and What His Job Is, etc. But there is not one word about the blatant unconstitutionality of the new department. It will not escape your notice that the very title Homeland Security is a clever little bit of propaganda. The people are now convinced that not only is the new agency constitutional, it is also necessary. The mass of the people has now been successfully mind-controlled, brainwashed. They believe Homeland Security is necessary. They believe that to control the people is necessary to make them safe. Now, let me go on. I say to you that the United States is forbidden by its Constitution and the Constitutions of the separate 50 states from having any central federal control mechanism imposed upon them. The so-called Homeland Security Bill is a travesty because it destroys the Republican form of government, which a Republican form of government is a structured government that is ruled by law. Let me break that down for you. A republic form of government is a structured government is a government ruled by law. The so-called Homeland Security Bill is a travesty because it destroys the Republican form of government and granted to the original states in the 10th Amendment, which it cannot be taken away from them, which is true, because the 10th Amendment, which is the last amendment of the Constitution, it all deals with the Bill of Rights. Anything after the 10th Amendment is a fraud. It is null and void. There is no 11th Amendment or 12th Amendment. Lawfully. Legally, yes. Lawfully, no. When you deal with legal matters, the word legal or legal has a form of law, but it's not actually law itself. So I want everybody to know that. Okay? Okay. The Homeland Security Act is therefore null and void and no law at all. Yet the brainwashed interdirected victims of Tavistock will obey it as if it were law. In short, the Homeland Security Agency is a deception and it cannot be made law. No measure that is unconstitutional can be enacted into law, and the Congress has urgent duty to repeal the law and that gave illegitimate birth to the Homeland and Patriot Acts forthwith. Because there's nothing patriotic about the Patriot Act. I can tell you that right now. Okay. I'm going to get on this thing about dealing with religion pretty soon. Get through with this in a little while. Okay. Now, there are also lawmakers who do not have even the vaguest idea of what constitutional law is, and they do not seem to care. As I spoke on it earlier in the lecture, most of your police officers and so forth don't even know about law. Don't really know law, but they think that what they think is law is what they're doing. That they are violating a lot of people's constitutional rights. Okay, they passed laws that were never tested as to their constitutionality. The majority of the legislators do not know how to do this anyway, and they really don't. Like I said before, they don't know law. They don't study the Constitution or constitutional law. very, very few of them that do. And the ones that do, a lot of them have been compromised through threat, duress, and coercion, bought off, or so forth. Okay. As a result, anarchy prevails in Washington. It may well come as a shock to most candidates who run for the House and Senate that each and every one of them is carefully checked and profiled by the behavior modification scientists at Tavistock, at one or more of its affiliates in the U.S. Any candidate who is playable to suggestion and found to be easy to control is puffed. Stock serves the black nobility and all of its elements, working to rob us of the victory of the American Revolution of 1776. Now the black nobility are the Moors. They have Moorish lineage that they will never tell the people about. But this is the black nobility of Europe. This is who they are, and this is their lineage, or what we call Tawny Moors. Okay? If the reader is unfamiliar with the black nobility, of course, the term does not refer to black people. That's a damn lie. Yes, it does. He haven't done his homework. This is a man called John Coleman. This is his book I'm reading out of. This is a European. Okay? Okay, let me go on. It refers to a group of extremely wealthy people, dynasties, whose history dates back for more than 500 years and who make up the backbone of the Committee 300. That's true. Okay, it says here, the substantial number of our citizens is even today totally unaware of how they have been manipulated and forced to accept new ideas, new cultures, and new religions. They have been grossly violated and don't know it. They are still being violated and still don't know what is happening, especially when it comes to opinion making through polling. It is all of this is unconstitutional because a lot of these wars had never been declared. You cannot declare war. They call themselves declare war on drugs, declare war on terrorism. You cannot declare war on the Taliban. Hell, they might even talk about declaring war on ISIS, this supposed group that was created to spread terror around the world, especially in Syria now. But the thing is, you cannot declare war on any terrorist group. It has to be a sovereign country. Declare war on any group. There is nowhere in the Constitution that says you can do that. Nowhere. And the Constitution has been grossly been violated and misrepresented by a lot of your misrepresentatives. Okay? Now let's get started on religion. Okay? It says here in the book, Holy Lockdown, The Church Limit Black, So-Called Black Progress, by Jeremiah Camara. Okay, let me read from his book. The social and psychological impact that the African-American church was made on the psyche of black people has been a concern for many years. When I initially considered writing a book that would challenge, question, and criticize the church, I began to feel as if I were a traitor to my people. Criticizing the church in the eyes of most so-called blacks has always been considered blasphemy and a forbidden thing to do. So-called black people have driven past the hardships of an oppressive American system, mainly on the fuel provided by our churches. This great institution has been the pillar of strength, bringing forth a doctrine of hope during slavery, during the present. It is difficult to state my position in this book with complete candor without being misconstrued, misunderstood or accused of attacking the Almighty. Many people perhaps a majority will draw inaccurate conclusions about me.
That goes for me, Dr. Eileen, Dr. Hakeem Bey, Dr. Bill Valentine, you name it. Taj Tariq Bey, Brother Abdulli Il Talib Mosi Bey, Sister Valara, Sister Raj Mariah, Sister Kadira, Dr. Lean Queen, I go for all of us. So, for that matter. So let me keep going on. I may even be regarded by some as a lost soul who has not yet experienced the true spirit of God. This interpretation would be entirely false. We are all entitled to our beliefs and opinions. However, my own personal gratification in writing a book of this nature lies in the sincerity of its content. Right, wrong, or in between, writing this book was something I felt compelled to do. Despite the possibility of public backlash, I anticipated that the majority of those who read Holy Lockdown will claim their church and preacher are different, and the accusations levied throughout this book do not directly apply to them. A common argument in defense of the church is that today's contemporary black churches are different from those of the past, provide modern messages, and are more in step with the new generation. Let me stop right there. No, they're not. Their messages are the same. They're singing the same song, only in a different way, with different words and dialogues and dialects. That's all. But the message is still the same. The result is still the same. Okay? You cannot keep on in life making mistakes and making that same mistake and think something positive is going to come out of it. It's not going to happen. Okay? Let me go on. Maybe this is true to a certain extent, but the perceived differences are not distinctive enough to separate them from the long tradition of black churches in America. In my opinion, if these claims of being different were true, then our communities and collective conditions would reflect such differences and we would see more fruit from the church labor. This is especially reasonable since it seems as if there is a church on every corner in the so-called black community. A new generation of so-called African-American preachers has emerged on the national and international scene. Desmond Tutu is for one. Okay. Let me go on. And not expanding world of so-called black clergy. They are the superstars. Okay, let me get next page here. These popular preachers are not necessarily disseminating new information, as I told you before, but simply coloring the language of traditional sermonic rhetoric. Exactly. For the record, I am not an atheist, nor am I taking aim at any particular religion. I am simply demonstrating love. You are sometimes critical of those you love, and the love for my people gives me the courage to share with them what I feel is important. All right. And the share I feel I'm sharing with you this night is important, as every other Wednesday night of the Happy Blow Talk show, to feed you information, to give you and make you aware of what's really going on, you know, whether or not Negro, black, and colored, or African-American, or black, or people of color. These are colorable labels. Most people around the world don't know they are using colorable labels to identify themselves. If you call yourself even Australian or Chinese, those are colorable labels, even in China. But when they say he's a Chinese and he comes from China, he's saying he's using a colorable label for himself, and China is the corporate war nation state. The country is Manchuria.
not China. Just like here in America, the country is America, or Amerikan. America is a corruption of the word Amerikan. But we are Asiatic, Aboriginal, Indigenous Moors here in North America, and the Americas, South Central America, South America, and the adjoining islands. So let me go on. Okay? It says here, as a people, we are far too religious and involved in the church to be experiencing so many social problems. Well, I can say that for the church. I can say that for some mosques. I can say that for some synagogues, temples, etc., 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 etc. The same thing, okay? Let me go on, move on. There is something grossly peculiar about this reality. It reflects a detachment of the head from the body, a kind of cultural decapitation within the so-called black collective. The church is the primary institution among blacks, but it is obvious in light of our social challenges that the head is not properly communicating with the body. How can an institution that makes us feel so good, feel so right, be harmful to us? The church has sometimes been described as being like rat poison, 99% sugary, sweet, feel good, and only 1% arsenic. But according to a report by Julie Hauserman in the St. Petersburg Times, only a pinch of pure arsenic can kill you. That 1%, that, in a sense, is killing us. It is the traditional, non-suspecting things we take for granted. When we examine the social ill facing our people, how can one possibly indict the church? I am not suggesting that the church is entirely responsible for all the negative issues involving so-called black people, but such as over-consumerism, economic disunity, high rates of hypertension, AIDS, prostate cancer, inner-city violence, or the crisis of a so-called black prison population. What is suggested that here is that the church has a profound impact on many facets of our lives. Most would agree that many problems facing us are a direct result of the injustices of racist American system at large. Exploitation, discrimination, racial profiling are just some of the staples found in every corner of the United States. Excuse me. Although social injustice against misnomered black people are a given, it is nonetheless incumbent upon us to be aware of the vague line in the sand that separates government accountability from self-responsibility. The bottom line is that we may not be so much victims of genocide as we are victims of suicide, part of the mind control experimentation. No, there are some people that are so, and a lot of us, really a lot of us are going to take it to their grave believing that it was a real Jesus Christ, which did not exist. The Jesus Christ as what you can say as the spirit or the Jesus degree, yes. Because all of us can have the Christ within us, can be Christ-like, or the Christ within. That is our higher self, our higher nature, our spiritual self. Then all of us can have the evilness and the wickedness and the twistedness of Satan, which is our lower self. When the higher self war with the lower self, and when the higher self triumphs over the lower self, that is, in essence, the true Armageddon. The people all over the world will fight against their lower selves and conquer their lower selves. That is the true Armageddon. Same way
and the Islamic Jihad, which has been misinterpreted very, very badly as war against the Western powers. That's not true. When the imams and the Islamic leaders, when it's the jihad, it actually means to war against our lower selves, to conquer our lower selves, so we can triumph over our lower selves, so we can move forward in the spiritual world. Okay, let me go on. Okay. Where am I? Okay. The church come into the picture because since our arrival here in North America and other parts of the world, it has had perhaps the greatest influence on the collective misnomered black process. Okay, stop here again. Okay, said the church comes into the picture because since the arrival here in America, since our arrival, but most of us was already here. This brother hadn't, obviously haven't realized that we are the original and the aboriginal inhabitants of this land, that the slave masters had lied to our people through the history of times, that most of us came through boats across the Atlantic. That is one of the biggest lies they have perpetrated on the Asiatic people here in North America. We were already here, Moors. We are Moors. We are the aboriginal indigenous people of this earthland, period. Okay, let me go on. Our thought process is inherently tied to our behavior. We have dedicated and committed ourselves to the church, more so than any other institution. The vast majority of misnomered black people attend church, and there is no other institution that rivals the church influence. That's right. That is very true. I mean, you can see a lot of these churches, some of them you see, if you look on Sunday, especially on the Sunday afternoon or Sunday noon or morning, you can see a lot of these churches are built like coliseums or baseball arenas. And they feel with them. They feel with them. And that's a lot of so-called money. As we say, notes, Federal Reserve notes, because there is no money. And another subject. All right. Let me move on. The church, therefore, is the leader of the people by default. The social shortcomings of African Americans first began with this mindset. Whenever people fail to live up to their potential or demonstrate anti-productive behavior, the crime must not only be traced to their actions, but to the thoughts of the people prior to their actions. Among other factors, it's primarily the mindset of misnomered African Americans that contributes the most to our overall lack of positive production. That is true. Some examples that hinder our lack of production include pumping our so-called dollars outside of our communities, violence toward one another, derogatory language in our music, and engagement in all sorts of regressive behavior. These actions are clear indications of incorrect thinking. Although the church is not an advocate of ill behavior, nothing less should be held accountable for what it does. If it is not an advocate of intellectual, political, economic, or social empowerment, it is guilty of cultural indifference and social apathy. That goes for the other religious institutions as well that hindered the Asiatic people from advancing like we should. So this is a part of the book Holy Lockdown, but he should have concluded all the religious institutions as well, because all of them are involved and are guilty of the same thing, our religious leaders, or we could say our religious misleaders, know the truth. Some of them have been compromised, or some of them after their own agenda. It's all about control, mind control. Okay, let me go on. Liberation must be central to the church doctrine. Race is relevant because we primarily live, work, and worship with other misnomered blacks. Therefore, it seems logical that we should concern ourselves with each other. There is nothing racist about wanting to improve one's race. The colorblind, which is we are the world theosophical rhetoric many of our children promote can only be applied in theory. Our problems are unique, and significant energy must be invested toward solving them. Since the black church is one of the biggest influence on this moment black collective, the thought process is reasonable to assume that the church would be significantly accountable for our social behavior and would have a major influence upon our culture, attitudes, and perspectives. Behavior is a reflection of one's thoughts. Our mindset requests spotlighting and inventorying. The church has demonstrated throughout holy lockdown provides some of the greatest clues to many of our most fundamental problems. Over many generations, blacks have developed an inseparable connection between the shamanic indoctrination that our ears and minds have been absorbed in the way we go about handling our daily business. Our ears are one of the doorways into our minds, and information supplied by preachers has been and is still in many ways psychologically untruthful. I do not mean to imply that this has been deliberate, but we as people, we are not at the crossroads where we must choose between stagnation and growth. Well, this is what he means here, and a lot of them are not deliberately, but some of them just don't know. Even some preachers don't know. They actually believe that there is a second coming of the Christ. A lot of them would die and go to their graves believing that. It is time we expand our thinking and usher in the winds of change. Roger Bacon, the English philosopher and scientist, stated, "He that will not apply new remedies must expect new evils," and that is true. I can repeat this again. He that will not apply new remedies must expect new evils. Exactly. Note the term preacher throughout this book is used as a generic term and generally description that includes many of the common names for clergy, such as pastor, bishop, minister, and reverend. Okay. Here we go. Black preachers are known for shouting at adults to get their points across. This is an act of condescension. Black congregants whose preachers shout at them are unconsciously demoted to the role of children. Like children, they attend church only to be chastised and ridiculed by their shouting preachers through a process of sermonic cleverly point out a sin of which they know anyone in general may be guilty of committing, even themselves. After the implication of preachers may say something like, "Y'all got awfully quiet all of a sudden," or "I must have struck a nerve in somebody," or "I see some folks squirming in their seats." No. Indirect ridicule through implication as a very effective technique trick that preachers use to give the impression that their sermons are effectively hitting home or in tune with our personal lives. Now, isn't that mind control or isn't that mind control? Tell me, okay? We are calculating being led into the direction most advantageous for the preacher. 10 church as empty jugs waiting to be filled. The emptier our jugs, the more susceptible we are to being sermonically exploited. We are adults who benefit from being taught and not tricked. Pastors have a good understanding of human psychology. A lot of them do. Don't think they don't, because they do. That's part of the game. That's part of the mind control game. That's religion has played, the church has played. But along with Tavistock Institute of England, along with the MK Ultra of the CIA, and et cetera. So your church play a big part on a massive scale. Okay. We cannot attend church as, okay, here we go. They know about emotional buttons to push and when to push them. They must be able to anticipate how people will react to their sermons. We do not have to attend church with a cynical attitude, but we must be aware of what is actually being said and done. Remember, we are in a church and not at the circus or a magic show. Do not apologize for being totally objective when listening to preachers. Sermons must possess more substance and less sensationalism. Ain't that the truth? There is enough entertainment within the music to keep us emotionally aroused. For example, notice whenever the lead singer from the choir performs a solo, no matter what the words the soloist actually sings, the congregation is much more likely to react emotionally based on how the soloist sounds. The words the soloist sings may indeed have merit. Yes, they do have merit because they reach a lot in the minds of the people that have been so hurt in their lives and so emotionally hurt, spiritually hurt, and mentally hurt. And so it all connects with them, and they know what tune to use when the soloist sings these different songs. Like I say, they know how the mind works. They study psychology. Okay, let me go on. The words the soloist sings may indeed have merit, but it is not the words of the soloist sing that causes the reactions, but the beauty in the sound. In the sound, what did I tell you before? The beauty in the sound emerging from his or her voice. They could sing ah or oh, and if it sounds good, they will get a lively reaction from the congregation. Emotional reactions are thereby generated based on quality of sound and feel of the music, not necessarily the words. This is another example of entertainment being such an integral part of the church. Many people go to church to hear the beautiful music. They find it satisfying, fulfilling, and as equally enjoyable as the actual sermon. And they do. I'll give you an example of the church uses the same technique and the same mind control techniques as entertainers do, even in your music and entertainment industry. Michael Jackson, peace be upon him, used the same techniques where he mesmerizes thousands upon thousands of the audience and his so-called fans, or you can say fans, meaning fanatics. So those of you who are not aware of, that's what a fan is, a fanatic. A lot of them, a certain way they move, the certain way they dance, even that grabbing of the crouch, a lot of people fall out faint from that act, you know, because they know the technique to use to get into the minds of the people. Okay, let me go on. At the conclusion of Sunday service, the pastor usually beckons to unsaved souls or non-members to get saved or join the church. This is where the music take on spiritual, seductive, and sensationalizing initiative. Pastors make gallant attempts to seduce non-members to join and or get saved. He accomplishes this with his right
hand man, the organist. At the moment, there's a fine line between recruiting souls and subtly creating an atmosphere of guilt. The preacher is the fisherman, and the organist is the bait. Together, they reel you in with book, line, and sinker. Or we could say, together they reel you in with hook, line, and sinker, similar to a dramatic scene in a movie. What did I tell you about the entertainment world? The entertainment world used the same techniques. The entertainment world and the church are all in sync with the mind control, MKA Ultra, and with the mass media control, et cetera, et cetera. All use the same technique. I can give you an example. They show you a certain film or documentary of what's going on maybe in Syria. They are lined up a whole bunch of children and babies being slaughtered or have been slaughtered, you know, and they show you this is what the ISIS has done. This is what the Taliban has done. Although the picture might not be a true picture. It may be something they made up. If you don't believe me, watch the movie Wag the Tail. I think that's the movie. I'm pronouncing it right. With Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman. They show you how they can plant things in the pictures. The Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington, as they plant him, as they plant a man in his place in this picture. Although this man has been dead for 3 years, and somewhere in Syria, Siberia, somewhere you've never been, but they can computerize your picture in a place where you've never been before. This is how deep the technology is that they're using, and a part of the mind control and brainwashing techniques that they use against the public and the masses of the people. So let me go on. Okay, it says here, perhaps pastors make gallant attempts to, I read this before. Come go at this one, okay? There's a fine line between recruiting souls and subtly creating an atmosphere of guilt. The preacher is the fisherman, and the organist is the bait. Because they reel you in hook, line, and sinker, similar to a dramatic scene in a movie. That is correct. If the music were taken out, the scene would not be nearly as powerful. For example, if you know most movies, they use similar music or sounds when people are fighting. They use dun 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 dun, or people when people are sad. They use certain sounds to reach your mind, you know, to put you in a certain mood, because they don't know what makes you tick. They know what buttons to push to make you feel a certain way. You know, let me go on. Okay, music during and at the conclusion of a sermon is a vital ingredient and generates more intensity and spiritual ecstasy than the preacher do alone. Music is the honey during and after the sermon, and catches the bees. When the preacher gets on a roll and begins to pick up sermonic steam, an organist often backs or supports this intensity by incorporating various gospel licks or short musical phrases that, in a sense, applause or co-signs the preacher's message. If you notice, when a preacher may say something that actually, excuse me, that acted relates to you, that happened to you, and happened to maybe the family member or whatever in real life, and he may say something
the phrase and the pianist may go along with it. He may say dum 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 dum, and it reaches to the mind and the psyche of the people, tell them to shout, make them cry, or make them get up and dance. That is the psychological effect they have on their congregations. Okay, let me go on. As far as music being part of a worshiping atmosphere, the misnomered black Muslims of the Nation of Islam understand the potential distraction of music and prohibit its uses in many mosques. There's a proper place and time for music and entertainment, and sometimes we misuse its purpose. For instance, every year in Atlanta, an annual business event to open to the public. The primary purpose of this affair is to introduce business, network, and sell products or services. The focus of the event and similar misnomered black business events often gets shifted to the entertainment segment of the function. These events may have business intentions, but they eventually merge into parties. Music groups are invited to perform and often wind up stealing the show because more energy is directed and toward the music rather than the main objective of the event. That's true, because a lot of us are heavily melanated people, and we have certain what it does, it hits certain vibrations hit certain points in our, what you can say, in the systems and the, in our mind psyche. It hits that, and it makes us jump, and it makes us give our energy toward the musicians than toward what's really important, what they're talking about. It says here, let me see. If preachers ignore this critical characteristic, they may have difficulty inspiring congregants to become members of their churches. And they know this because this is why they do the things that they do. This is why music is in the church. Not to give them spirituality, but to make them servants and slaves to something that does not exist. I'm going to go on. Many of them feel a sense of disappointment if their sermon, coupled with their acts of entertainment, fails to unite the emotional flames of the congregation. It is disappointing that a preacher's ability to excite and arouse is often worth more than their ability to educate and lead. Many erroneously attribute to the emotional atmosphere in the church, presence of God, believing that the high emotion displayed in church is a sign of the Holy Spirit. Isn't it ironic that the presence of God becomes more profound the more preachers incorporate entertainment, theatrics, sensationalism, tactics into their sermons? How often would the Holy Spirit show its presence in the church if pastors preach the exact same sermon but delivered it void of this repetition, animation, shouting, and showmanship? Church is an entertaining experience, but there is a long-term consequences to pay for spiritual shenanigans. Church takes on a different meaning when emotion and entertainment cloud objectivity or it is camouflaged under the pretext of something else. That is very true. A lot of the church, a majority of us, sad to say, are Christians. But let me tell you, that's not giving honor and respect to our ancient foremothers and forefathers, because our ancient and foremothers and forefathers were not Christians. They were not black. They were not African Americans. They were not people of color. they were Moors, Asiatics, Aboriginal indigenous people of this earth land. Another thing, so-called black people cannot be Christians because it's not a part, or it's not what you call being in the right frame of mind. It's not our original culture. It does not belong to us. It belongs to the European Christendom, not us. Nothing to do with Christendom. We have nothing to do with Christianity. But the problem is with us, during the Aquarian age, which is the age of truth, is that most of us are not ready. Most of us are not ready. Maybe 20 to 30% of us are, but the rest of the 70% is not. Because we have not, most of us want to be Christians. Some of us, you know, Hindus or whatever. And this is what you call the holy lockdown is about. It impedes us from progress, stops us from progressing, for being the potential of the people, what we should be on this earth land. So it's a long, hard struggle. Still a long, hard struggle. Let me go on, okay? It says that today, misnomered black preachers are still delivering sermons designed to make us feel better. They continue to deliver sermons that do not have a lot to do with black progress and liberation, which it does not. Has nothing to do with the liberation of our people. Nothing to do with justice for our people. Nothing to do with the uplifting of fallen humanity. And this is what we should be. This should be every Asiatic person on the globe. This should be our mission, to uplift fallen humanity. But you cannot uplift fallen humanity if you refuse to be yourself. If you refuse to be yourself, how can you uplift fallen humanity? It's not going to happen. Okay, let me go on. The church rituals and ceremony vernacular are locked inside of a time capsule, unable to recognize that the world and misnomered black people have significantly changed. The preachers are still trying to get the same old dogs, sermonic rhetoric, to hunt. Old dogs, however, quit hunting after a while. That is very true. Sermons have gotten a little more creative over the years, thanks in part of the computer age, a variety of biblical software is available to assist preachers. They can input any word or phrase and unearth its exact location within the Bible. Preachers are also becoming more biblically informative with the advent of Bible dictionaries and concordances, essentially with the right tools and adequate improvisational skills. Many of us can effectively elaborate on stories within the Bible. Preachers must be ever mindful of the progress being made within their daily or weekly sermonic messages. Future generations should not have to listen to recycled rhetoric more suited to stirring up people than it is for building them up. We need to examine our own experiences. The next time we attend church, when the service has ended, let us think about whether we truly learn something new, which they don't. Majority of the 70%, or maybe 75% of the so-called misnomered black Christians, they leave out that church not knowing no more about that Bible before they went in. Goes on every Sunday. every Sunday, sometimes during the week. Depends on how holy they call themselves are. They don't know more about Christianity or nothing more about spirituality. Some have been church members for 50, 60, maybe longer than that, 70 years, and still don't know about what true spirituality is. And like I say, die and go to their graves with that. A lot of the falsehood has been taught them through these years. So we're about to close on out. I have a lot, as I regret. If you have any comments or anything like that, you can call me, area code 314-644-4425, or you can call Dr. Eileen Bay, area code 910-364-9099. Dr. Eileen is a master Reiki healer, philosopher, and he also teaches a lot of the Tai Chi Kong techniques that you, those who want to learn. Certain aspects of breathing, Reiki breathing. Okay? So, as I say to the rest of the world and the human family, peace and love to you all. I'm out.